Chapter 62. Air Raid. I left Clunny Hill College early on Saturday morning, having completed experience week and a second week as a departmental guest. These programs had been my introduction to the Findhorn Foundation. I left with Alan, a member who was driving back to Glasgow to visit his parents. From Glasgow, I planned to take the train south to Ayr to rendezvous with my romantic interest from Sydney, a lawyer, who was originally from Ireland. Before leaving me at the Glasgow railway station, Alan made sure I had a ticket and was waiting at the right platform for the Ayr train, because I was in a bit of a daze after 3 weeks at Clunny. I arrived at Ayr to find my friend had organised a swank hire car to take us on a whirlwind tour of the Lake District, Edinburgh, Inverary, and finally Stranraer, where we said our goodbyes before he took a ferry back to Belfast. After he departed, I stood on the railway platform feeling very alone and disheartened, and wondering what to do next. I decided to take a train back to Glasgow and from there, another to Oban, a small port town on the west coast. From Oban, I hoped to resume my exploration of the more remote parts of the Inner Hebrides. But before I could do that, I needed a quiet place to collect myself and recover from a very strange weekend. Once aboard the train, a fellow passenger and frequent visitor to Oban suggested the charming bed and breakfast, run by an eccentric Scot. Thankfully, he had space and was an unexpected breath of fresh air. He introduced me to his mother, an art school trained artist, who wove beautiful rag rugs from recycled fabrics. She was a kindred spirit, and was just what the doctor ordered, with our lively conversation ranging across subjects of mutual interest, including art, textiles, and aesthetics, punctuated with many cups of tea. Whilst staying at the B&B, I overheard a guest waxing lyrical about her recent time on Air Aid, a small, tidal island off the southwest tip of Mull, and within cooee of the sacred Isle of Iona. Her description of island life certainly piqued my interest. I already knew that Air Aid was owned by a Dutch family, who visited for a month each summer. I also knew that between visits, foundation people were caretakers of the island, with a cow to milk, extensive food gardens to cultivate, fish to catch, as well as hosting paying guests. Listening to her descriptions, I realized Air Aid would be the perfect place for me to hang out, whilst I waited to continue the foundation's step-by-step membership process. I telephoned Air Aid, and yes, they had a guest space, so I took a ferry from Oban to Mull, a bus to Finnafit, followed by a pleasant 2 kilometre walk through fields of yellow irises, to the boat ramp pickup point, where I was met and rowed across to the island. That day the sea was calm. On dry land once more, I was billeted with a Mexican-American member, who was living in one of the beautiful stone cottages that lined the main street. Air Aid guests were expected to work, so I made myself useful weeding peas, checking fishing nets, making candles, and polishing stained glass Celtic crosses. The sale of candles and crosses provided additional income for the foundation. Before long, I discovered Air Aid had a fascinating history, as a result of its connection to 19th-century lighthouse construction. For hundreds of years, the west coast of Scotland was a graveyard for ships, caught in the fierce Atlantic storms. To protect the huge volume of shipping up and down the west coast of Britain, the 19th-century solution was to build lighthouses and place them strategically. Air Aid was selected for the dry construction of the lighthouse for the Duhartach Skerry, a basalt rock protruding from the ocean, some 22 kilometres southwest of Air Aid. The first task was to build the shore station for the Dubhartach Lighthouse. Air Aid granite was used to build a series of outbuildings and cottages to house the construction workers. Next, the lighthouse construction platform was built and lastly, the lighthouse itself. When complete, each shaped and fitted block was carefully numbered before being shipped out for re-erection on the Skerry. Outside of work time, I wandered the island, was taught to row a dinghy, watched by a pod of curious harbour seals, and, in fine weather, day-tripped to Iona to visit the restored abbey and other ancient sites that were allegedly the remains of St. Columba's original community. But without a doubt the highlight of my time on Air Aid was pitching in to help farmer Hugh shear his sheep. The sheep were adjusted on Air Aid to keep the grass down. Early on the appointed day, we waited for low tide, before walking the sheep across the wet sand to the shearing shed on Mull. It was a matter of all bodies on deck to do this, both human and canine. Along the way it was made known that I was Australian, and, by virtue of nothing more than my nationality, it was assumed that I knew everything there was to know about shearing. Yet, I knew very little. My only experience was the result of a one-day roustabout gig in the New Guinea Highlands, an unlikely place to learn about shearing. After yarding the sheep, we adjourned to the two-story grey stone farmhouse for breakfast, where we were offered one or two wee drams of Scotch whisky, with our cornflakes. Now, fortified, the shearing began. There were three shearers, and I was given the job of rolling the fleeces. To do this I was shown how. With the tip side up, each side of the fleece was folded in, after which it was firmly rolled from the arse end to the neck. The neck wool was then stretched out to create a strap, that was long enough to wrap around the roll and tuck in. The rolls were then stacked against the wall of the shed. When the shearing was done, we waited for low tide to walk the sheep back across the sand to Air Aid. After a good day's work, we were tired but satisfied, knowing that by helping the farmer, we'd fostered a degree of goodwill in the Mull community. I spent almost 6 weeks on Air Aid, but as the group dynamics became increasingly unpleasant, I chose to return to the B&B in Oban. Undeterred by the Air Aid experience, I returned to Cluny to fulfill the next set of requirements necessary to be considered for Foundation membership. To be continued. On Reflection. The Irish Lawyer. Our romantic dalliance was brief. I met him in Sydney whilst I was recovering from a disastrous 6-year relationship, after which I was left wondering if there was a sincere man somewhere in the world for me. But the lawyer was not that man, and I haven't seen him since. The Air Aid community in 1984 comprised 7 adults and 5 children. At the beginning of my 6-week stay, it appeared that the membership was living by the foundation principles of honoring the earth and each other, having a spiritual practice, being conscious of self, each other, nature and personal interactions, being committed to truth, kindness, love, and growth in these interactions. But the longer I stayed, the more obvious the cracks became. It occurred to me that the principles may have been good in theory, but more difficult to implement in daily life. From my perspective, as an outsider, it seemed that the members were in need of additional conflict resolution tools. Conflict resolution. After my close-up and personal experience on Air Aid, I wondered if patches of unresolved conflict would be unavoidable at both Cluny and the park. No doubt I'd find out, as I knew the foundation membership, willing to participate in this crazy experiment, was drawn from all over the world. A dynamic fusion of personalities and cultures, seeking to live in harmony with the environment and each other. But, even with the best intentions, things can go wrong. I hoped that the broader foundation membership, mostly based at the park, would, in time, offer a wider choice of companions, as well as the space to avoid folk who were not my cup of tea. Time would tell. Facts. Air Aid. In 1977, a Dutch family bought the island. A year later, it was offered to the foundation, on condition they'd maintain the infrastructure and vacate the island for 1 month over summer holidays. Dub Artak was one of many lighthouses designed by Thomas Stevenson, writer Robert Louis Stevenson's father, who worked with the Northern Lighthouse Board. The masonry work for the 44-meter tower was completed on Air Aid in 1871 and re-erected on the Skerry a year later. The lantern, optical apparatus, and fog bell was installed the following year. The construction cost of the Air Aid Shore Station was over £10,000, and the lighthouse cost almost £66,000 sterling. Dub Artak was the first British isolated rock lighthouse to use kerosene. The lighthouse was fully automated in 1971, with a helipad constructed a year later. The light is now remotely monitored by the Northern Lighthouse Board in Edinburgh. Author Robert Louis Stevenson visited Air Aid whilst Dub Artak was being built under his father's supervision. Air Aid is a tidal island. Stevenson incorporated this natural tidal phenomenon into Kidnapped, his historical fiction adventure blockbuster for boys, published in 1886. The full title of his book is quite a mouthful. It was titled Kidnapped, being memoirs of the adventures of David Balfour in the year 1751, how he was kidnapped and cast away, his sufferings in a desert isle, his journey in the wild highlands, his acquaintance with Alan Breckstewart and other notorious Highland Jacobites, with all that he suffered at the hands of his uncle, Ebenezer Balfour of Shaws, falsely so called, written by himself, and now set forth by Robert Louis Stevenson. Saint Columba was a 6th-century Irish abbot and missionary evangelist, credited with taking Christianity to the pagan Picts and Scots, in what is now Scotland. Columba left Ireland in a small boat to cross the North Atlantic Ocean, with 12 religious companions, and made landfall on Iona in 563 AD. They built a monastery which became an influential religious and political institution in the region for many centuries. Saint Columba died on Iona in 597 AD, and was buried in the monastery he'd created. After Columba's death, the monastery continued to flourish. But, 200 years later, in 795 AD, Viking raiders attacked for the first time. Then again in 802 and again in 806, and finally in 825 AD. During the 806 attack, 68 monks were massacred. Many of those who survived chose to relocate to Kells, in Ireland, possibly taking with them the famous illuminated manuscript that later became known as the Book of Kells. But the Christian influence remained on Iona, as the result of the Vikings' swift adoption of the Christian religion. The Iona Abbey. The present-day abbey was built on the site of St. Columba's monastery in 1200 AD, by Viking Ragnar, as a centre for Benedictine worship. During the English Reformation, all the abbey's assets were stripped, and the settlement fell into decline and ruin. In 1938, the Reverend George MacLeod reformed the Iona community and began restoring the abbey. Since then, the abbey has become a draw card for Christian pilgrims and tourists from all around the world.